Parshas Emor, so it's a parasha that deals with Misa and the question of how do we look at Misa, you know, what's the oimik of the Tumah of Misa and so on. So the first is a chinuch over here. Mishosha mitzvah. Lefi shakahanim nifcha voz Hashem baruch hu. K'moshama akos sifdoshu lelehehem. Akei nechikim na'meis. So in answering the question, is a mace a good thing or a bad thing? If it's bad, why isn't everybody mitzvah to misrachik? So the answer is it's a certain darga. And someone has the darga of kedusha needs to stay away from it. But tumah means something that should be distanced, something that's not positive. And a dead person is the strongest type of tumah. Why? What's the inyan of it? The inyan who? Kibihi pared me olav tzuras aseichel achaya toiva. V'yishoya hu levadoi. When a person has in himself a chelik that's toiv, that's very toiv, that's an neshama, and it's connected to a guf. And that guf is in its own self. If it's not inspired by neshama, it's kula mishteki Torah. So as long as the person is living and the person is sort of a merger of the two and there's a struggle between the two, in the guf and neshama, the person can be seen mitzad the neshama shabai. But when the neshama leaves it and it's kula left over with guf, and the guf is the chelik ha'adam that is noita tera. It's absorbed with bad. That's something that is should be nesrachik. So the Chinuch says a very important insight. I think sometimes it's not understood enough, not taken into account. Be'emes, a dead body is a dover that's tummy. And by all rights, a person should look at it and say it's something that is most, because it's kol kula, the fleshiness of the person. Kol kula, it's the part of the person that was nimshach to bed and to ra and so on. And therefore, it's something that a kohen doesn't get close to. So what about a relative? What about somebody, why is a kohen allowed to be metame and mechuyev metame to his kroivim? So he says over here that the Torah takes into account human emotion. And a person needs to express his emotions. A person needs to be able to mourn. And therefore the Torah overrode something which is theoretically correct because it's a natural emotion that a person needs to express tsar on a mace. And he says, and he adds, the need to mourn someone who's dead is a very, very fundamental need of a person. The crying is something that gives a person relief. The mourning is something that gives a person relief. And therefore, the Torah did not ask a person to overstep that. And it's very important to note. And somehow people think that that emotions have no makom whatsoever. And it's not true. This is part and parcel. He'll later speak about a kohen gadol. Why a kohen gadol is different, we're not going to get to it this, as I can just sort of mention it. In next page, why a kohen gadol is not metamei to kroivim, if what he said is true. So he says a kohen gadol is somebody who is beyond this world. He's already there. And he just sort of keeps a token presence in this world. So there's no real need for it. And it's important to understand this havchana you know, people have the letter to Vilna Goyen where sister came to visit, and he said, he didn't go out to say hello to her. He said, you know, time is very short. Mitzvah Shem Ralom Haba, we'll have a lot of time to schmooze, but here time is very short, this and that. It's a letter that teaches us about where the Vilna Goyen was holding. It is not a letter to emulate in any way, unless a person feels he's like the Vilna Goyen's Madriga. If he feels like that, he's not asking questions, and he's not. That's not. You know. It's. But the idea that this is a all of the extraordinary and haggis of big people, the Balyashiv and so on, that they seem to have very little emotional interaction or emotional needs. Those are a sign of somebody who's holding there. For anybody less than that, it's vicious, it's uxorious, it's wrong. And sometimes it's hard to explain, but it depends where you're holding, and that's where the person should be. There's a letter, the Rambam, that I always refer to. It's like, if people don't know it, and my son-in-law actually read it at a Shabbaton, and it's always in Yeshiva Ketana, and he asked people to guess who wrote the letter. And not only couldn't they guess, but they wouldn't believe him afterwards either. The Rambam got a letter from a friend of his, somebody had learned with him. The Rambam was at the store for about a year, maybe less than a year. And it was him, his father, his brother, and someone else. And this other person ended up, I think, in Iraq and Baghdad. And he sort of lost contact with the Rambam. And 10 years later, he wrote him a letter asking for some favor. And in the letter, he chastises the Rambam for losing contact with him, for not keeping up the friendship. And the Rambam writes back and he says, you accuse me of infidelity when you are the one who was not true to me. He said, we were so close. And a short while after I left, my father passed away. And, you know, and you didn't bother to send me any nichma velum. And you can't tell me that you didn't know about it because people send from all over the world. Then he said, my brother died and he left me terribly, terribly distressed. His brother supported him. His brother was a wealthy businessman, supported him. And he drowned in a business trip to India. And he said, for a year, I couldn't do anything. I was depressed. I had no life. He left me with the tragedy of his death, the financial losses, almana, the yesema, and I couldn't come to myself. And he said, you know, and even now it's only learning that keeps me going, and I know another simcha. But I am more distressed by the loss of your friendship. We were so close and so on. And by all rights, I shouldn't answer. But he said, Ahava techasa kol apshoyim, the bonds that forged when the four of us searched for HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the deserts and the mountains stay forever. It gives me tremendous joy to hear from you and to hear how well your children is doing, whatever I can do for you, I'll do for you, and so on and so forth. It's a remarkable letter. People can't believe the Rambam had feelings. Why would the Rambam have friends? Why would the Rambam care if his friends kept in cash with him or not? I don't know, like people find that to be almost a chisson in a person that he has a bond. And the way the Rambam expresses the bond was forged because the four of us together searched for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's incredible. It's such an incredible expression. Like upon him, he says, the Torah...
The Goyen...
What?
Is that... It sounds a little bit that the Goyen was greater than the Rambam. What does it mean? Is it different personality?
I don't know. You know what? I don't know. But like upon him, the Goyen, the only letter that we have that letter Goyen, we know that the Goyen's lifestyle was also extremely different than the Rambam. The Goyen was withdrawn totally, no shaykhs to this world. The Rambam, you don't find that the Rambam was involved in, you know, the last kufa of his life. He was a doctor and was persecuted. I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, all I can tell you is the pieces that we have. Like, we have a letter from the Goyen, we have a letter from the Rambam. They're very, very different. The Rambam's letters are extremely, other letters also, extremely emotionally expressive. People that came out against him and his feelings about them, how to deal with his feelings, and how he deals with people like that. I mean, the Rambam expresses it very, very powerfully. I don't know. the Goyen is very different. The Goyen, you don't find anything in the Goyen that one would include. I wonder sometimes when the Goyen writes in Mishlei, he describes natural, you know, things of life. A person's like this, a woman's like that, it's that. You sometimes wonder, like, I guess they're almost like Ruach HaKodesh, because I can't imagine any context that the Rambam, you know, like he writes, a woman that's a difficult woman is just compared to like rain that pitters and patters. He says it's not because there's a specific, it's like when somebody gives you a big punch, it hurts. But a woman who's a Isha Ra, it's like just an ongoing nagging. And it's not something you can identify as a specific act of difficulty. But how did the guy know that? I'm just curious. Like, I don't see him hanging out in somebody's house and having this. I can't, you know, there's something about in Mishlei, he's describing a lot of life. And you wonder where that came from. And I don't know, you know, but it is a different story, like I say. Okay, next piece. Next piece is on Abarbanel, and he speaks about death also. The goal of the end of life is that the neshama and the guf go separately, each their own way, with a perfect separation. In other words, no part of the guf is embedded in the nefesh. Vizuhi amofas hanefcheres vakdusha shetispire the nefesh na guf. We believe that this arvim tchunas achayim of pisusam is atzmehem alashir nefradim achalakim and beis amofas hefred gamol. So the tachlis is that it completely they separate totally and cleanly. Meshamar esha chachamim v'yoshev ha'ofa el ha'ores k'shahoya v'ruach tashva l'kim ha'shen nitna v'nosna v'chamayin zalamu itinol lo'y k'mesh noschor v'tzolayma mib'li'iru v'tchunis gashmiz. So the deal is that when the nefesh goes up to Shemayim, there is zero of chumrius attached to it. But, he says, v'afroda hi koshem oid l'matzah is ha'noshen. This type of separation is extremely rare. Most people have within the nefesh a strong attraction to chaima. Being that the nefesh and the guf went together all the time, so the nefesh also has trouble functioning, you know, of making a Shabbos without the cholent. V'lachein be'ez ha'mavis yisharu beguf inyanim royim nefsadim. So when a person dies, there are all sorts of bad left there. The olam yodin boy beim ruchus atuma shamrel etzla mesim is amr sinu shenefesh harosh kosher li parid min aguf ki gavu da amra de shadia chizvi. So it's fascinating. The Gemara says what's an easy death. The Gemara says a certain type of disease. And the Gemara says it's like taking a hair out of milk. What's a tough death? I think it says Askara. And what's it like? It's like taking a coarse rope and pulling it through a thin hole, which this kind of gives you kind of the, what do they call, the jitters, you know, and you have that creaking, squeaking sound. But what's it a muscle to? What are we trying to explain? And he says, this is what the muscle is to. The first one, it's possible for the hair to come just clean of the milk, even though it was on the milk, but just float on top and just take it off. The other one, as you pull the rope out, because it's so stuck, it's bound to leave over threads and strands inside. So it's sort of a muscle for things that are so stuck together that you're not going to get a clean separation. Well, the fish, the klala noshim, echad amabrach amamid yikolem zeh, goza ator yituma chamur al kol atumis, tumis adamis. So because the vast majority of people, this is what their misa looks like, so the Torah said this tumas meis. Kib emes hatumai hi bebegorim, lenim shechot kimi pas ha-nefesh ha-zois. lefishin leniskayim v'yoshev v'ofal oretz k'shishiv v'ruach tosher lekim atasana avol nishabem inyonim azikim etamim. Atshalizois hasib oisat neshama oilu v'yadis shtei masa pechak kloisim v'karam chazal atzvazal mitam v'atzchama enim etam v'shem tumel k'ir v'anesh v'kul. So he says something very, very fascinating. Any time you have bits and pieces of the nefesh stuck in the guf, that is a cause for evil instead of good. In other words, when a person has a full nefesh, so the nefesh is trying, the nefesh has itself ambition, drive, etc., etc. Those are kunas of a nefesh. And the guf is something that weighs on it. It is a tug of war. But when a person is nifta, so the ikka part of his nefesh is gone, but then there are a person whose nefesh was enmeshed with gashmis. Let's take an example. I'm going to use just an example to illustrate it. Since we don't actually know what we're talking about so much, no. But an example, a person, the concept of ambition to become something more than you are is uniquely human. An animal has no such, an animal fights and struggles for food, for shelter, for position, whatever it is. The musig of being able to say, I want to be more than I am, is uniquely human. And it's there because a person needs to become more than just another animal on this planet. It needs to become something above and beyond. And that's where you have the goal, ambition and its goals expressed appropriately. But let's say a person lives in this world and his goals and his sense of what's ideal are sort of enmeshed with this world. So now being a wealthy person, everybody oohs and ahs, having some sort of covet that everybody oohs and ahs, prominence, whatever it is, the ambition of a person becomes intertwined with that, and part of his kochos hanefesh become part of it. Given enough nituk, where the ikka part of the nefesh, the pnimius nefesh, is no longer there or not operating, but the kochos hanefesh have gone into the guf, and are making the guf alive as a guf, that becomes a davar tamei. So it's sort of the taking, it's the shirayim of the nefesh in the guf. The fact that the nefesh didn't come clean from the guf, but said, no, I'd rather realize my sense of ambition and greatness through the guf. That's where the tumah lies. And these are all the kochos mazikim. These are sort of lacking important components. All of Ruchnius as a whole is positive only when it's connected to something that is above everything. But when you take the various kochos and nefesh and infuse them in a human body without the teichen, without the pnimius of it, then you get this chorban. Omnam, he says. And that's why a person is more metame. That's the reason why the higher up you're on the ladder of Brias in this world, the more you're metame. Because it's the kochos hanefesh that give the guf so much more destructiveness. It's like when you have a misbehaving kid of some sort. The brighter and shrewder the kid is, the much worse his misbehavior is, because he can push it and he knows how to do it and so on. A goof in itself, in its most docile state, just kind of sitting and, you know, chugging down beers and so on, is a chaymer, and it's not great, and that's it. But when you attach to it a person who's driven to be the biggest beer drinker, to make sure he's only drinks beer, to figure out a way, whatever it is, that's when you get Ryan, it's in its worst way. Omnam, he says, Karnim sal ma'at of lecha zaris an shimofesh, I said, after chaim oisi keshavaruv, I will hoya chaim ram nimshach achaseh homaseh. Yes, there were some people that none of the kochos and nefesh were embedded in the guf. They were clean, and everything was dictated by the das. Ubishas misosom leitigbar yad chaimram lehamshich hanefesh achrov. And when they died, their physical self at zero was not able to take any of their ruchnis self and subordinate it. The neshama could just go straight out and all of it. This is something incredible, and this is unusual to the point of being almost an ace. Then the offer is just offer. There's no part of the nefesh of the person in it. I once said, Pshat, it says by the curse to Adam Rishon was v'zeh sapecha tocha lechem. So when you just read it superficially, it means you have to work very hard, you have to sweat to earn your bread. That's not what it says. It says v'zeh sapecha tocha lechem. That by the sweat of the hands or the feet, no, the body works so that the body eats. Nothing bad about that. V'zeh sapecha means you have to put so much thought into it. You have to take the mind, which can be thinking of other things, and invest that in inyanei olam hazeh. That's the klala. Stuff with the b'zeh sapecha tocha lechem, by the sweat of the brow, because the brow should have been mishubet, should have been the seichel, and being oisik only sifis. The fact that the person is mishabet the seichel, that's where the problem comes. So the rare person that is b'zeh mashon pecha, let's say yoyim shvei srevi batle kehuna. That's why Rabbi Beina Kaddish, who was totally minutik from this world's hanas, there was no tumas kahuna. Hilafisha Rabbi Beina Kaddish eloiki benafshei ma'isav lechein yotze mechal yelude isha binyan meil. Because Rabbi Beina Kaddish was totally kaddish, he had it so he was different than anybody else. But Amar Abchia sheba Adam kimoisei bata tumas meis v'taras kahuna. And the truth is, if you take a look at Rabbeinu HaKadosh's, how he himself expressed what he felt was unique about himself, so he says that, lifted up his 10 fingers and said that I wasn't Nen of SS Baisai in this world. Now, it's a very nice Nida not to be Nene, but what exactly is it in terms of the pnimius of a person? In other words, what is that? That's expressing who he was. There's no real Aveira to be Nene from things, because it's kosher and it's not, it's a Mila. The point of it was, none of my kochos hanefesh were in any way invested in olam hazeh. The hana and the tainug that you have of something is what makes you invested in it. Nafshiistik, you want it, you crave it, you think about it, you fantasize about it, you try to attain it. All of that starts with something that I'm drawn to, that I like. Rabbi Nachman said, my world of Hana did not include Olam Hazeh, and Bemela there wasn't anything of me that was part of it, and Bemela he wasn't Netame. But much is by Inya Zayyusim, because much Rabbi Nachman Shalom, also same thing, that, we'll speak about that parasha as well. But upon him, his point is over here that the Rabbi Nachman says, what makes fascinating, it's different in the chinuch to some degree. The chinuch says what makes the guf tamei is that when the nefesh leaves it, the what's left over is the bad that dragged the person down. The Barmanel says it a lot more nuanced and different. He says other. It's a guf in itself is just offer. Offer is not tamei. It's when you have the nefesh in it and you're giving kochos. There's an expression in Kabbalah and Chassidish Sfarim a lot that when you do certain things, you're giving a unique to the Sitra Achra. You're allowing the Sitra Achra to draw chiyus from it. In other words, as long as the Yitzhar is kept as dry outside force, that's fine. But when you invest some of your life force in it, that's when it becomes a problem. There's a Vratzka Bramsky said, similar to what I said before, he said, silly women cry in a sana teikif when they get to the piece. Adam may offer the seifel offer. A person comes from offer and he's going to die, and everybody starts crying. He said, the equation is a good equation. Adam may offer a seifel offer. There's nothing wrong. That equation should not cause us to cry. V'nafsha yovi lachmai, that the person should mourn. That he has to trade in part of his nefesh for it. That's the problem. So the Agaponim, that's the point that Rabbi makes. Okay, I have to run a little early. I have there's a Yom Iyun in Yeshiva today. It's a very nice event. It brings in a lot of all that community, limited bachrams. You know, it's a whole thing. So okay, good. Okay, I got.
Thank you.
Well too.